Hey, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. Glad you could join me. Great show in store for you. How's your season going, or how did it go? That's our principal topic for today. I'll be taking lots of calls on that subject right here in the Cabela's podcast studio, as well as some hunting strategy and dog handling tips and a lot of fun. It's all about you, your calls, your dogs, your hunting season. Promise to keep it concise, to the point, and not waste your time or insult your intelligence. That's what it's all about here at the Upland Nation podcast. So stick around, and I'll have all sorts of great bargains for you, discounts, and a chance to win a shotgun from our friends at Pointer Shotguns. It's all coming up right here on the Upland Nation podcast. Like I said, all about the season just passed or about to pass out here in Oregon. As this is recorded, I have one more weekend left, and then if I get a hall pass for it, I'm headed for Nevada to close out the entire chukar season down there. I won't tell you exactly where, but somewhere in northern Nevada. Had some good luck down there before and hoping to cover some more ground. That's one of the fun things about this season for me. I resolved not to hunt the same place twice and not to hunt any place I'd hunted before. I had to break that rule on a television trip to Kansas a while back, but other than that, it's been all new places for all wild birds. And in the course of doing that, one of the interesting things, and I bet somebody will bring this up when I start taking calls, is the people. I've been to some new places. I've stayed in some interesting spots, and in the course of that, got to know a lot of folks who I wouldn't have got to know any other way. And believe me, once they know you have a dog, once you know they have a dog, all of a sudden the floodgates open and they know somebody you know who knows somebody you know and who knows somebody they know. Seems to work out pretty well. And, you know, it's one of the bonuses to hunting new places or to hunting places with new people. Hope you're having a good one. I know I am looking forward to closing out the season on a high note. And if yours is still in session, good luck. All right, let's thank our friends at Sage and Breaker. Been with me since very beginning of this Upland Nation podcast. Rated 5 stars by their customers. You can go and take a look at all those reviews and everything else. When it comes to gun care and gun cleaning products, they are crafted at the highest caliber, sageandbreaker.com. And just had a good meeting at the SHOT Show with my friends at Dogtra. If you'd like a new collar to train your dogs, or one dog, both ends, the TNB Dual is the instrument for you. No toggling back and forth. 2 sets of buttons on the handheld transmitter. No confusion even for a guy like me. Learn more about Dogtra TNB Dual Collars at dogtra.com. Stick around. I have a discount and free shipping offer coming up from Dogtra. All right. So our first caller is from somewhere in the South. Richard, whereabouts are you down there?
I'm down here in Columbus, Georgia, near Fort Benning. I retired out of the Army a few years ago, so stayed here.
Well, smart move for a lot of reasons. I think I've been hunting down in that area before at a couple of the kind of plantation-oriented spots down there. You doing anything like that?
Yeah, well, because I'm retired military, I have access to hunt on Fort Benning, and there's not a lot of quail hunters around here, so I just jump on the deer hunting pages and ask if they've jumped any quail, let me know. And I have about 50 pinpoint locations of coveys of quail, so I'm doing pretty good down here to be able to get the dogs out and put them on a covey every now and then.
Good on you, and I'm watching my phone to make sure you send all those spots to me in the next 15 minutes. By the way, that's a joke, everybody. so don't get on me about that kind of hot spotting. Richard, you're what kind of dogs you running?
So I have a German Shorthair Pointer. He's 1.5 years old, and I have a Deutsch Drahthaar.
Oh, yeah. Well, welcome to the fraternity.
Yeah, and that's a hell of a fraternity to be in.
Yeah, are you testing in the VDD for that dog?
I tested him in the VJP.
Okay, yeah.
And, but when I got him, I really, really wanted to go to the arm brewster.
Yeah.
And he didn't score high enough on the rabbit track. He missed it by 2 points. He got a 64 or 63. So I think it's, what does it take, a 65 to get there?
Well, I don't know because I don't have the time for that kind of stuff. You're a 1.5-year-old short hair. There's kind of a backstory in all of that. You want to tell us a little bit about how your season's going and how that's come together?
Yeah, so the backstory on him is I just got him, and it was unfortunate. Not unfortunate that I got him just the way I got him. I had a 3-year-old German short hair that I was doing hunt tests with and field trialing with, and the last field trial of last fall, or no, I'm sorry, in the spring, the last field trial in the spring, she missed first place by 21 points, and she made a hell of a retrieve, but it was like, I don't know, 100 and some yards, but she dropped it before she got to me to get the feathers out of her mouth. It was like 80 degrees that day. Mm. But at that point, I've always force fetched my dogs, but I never force fetched her. And so I decided, you know what? I'm going to force fetch her through the summer. And then in the fall, we'll get to your championship. So I did that, and I trained. And I mean, I was training 2 times a day with this dog, and she was just doing everything I could ever want, backing, retrieving the hand, stopping to flush, everything. And another thing that, you know, she broke on a point because another dog didn't back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, so how do I get past this? You know, so I had a friend with a Cocker Spaniel, and I said, what we're going to start doing to, you know, get that out of her head is every time she points, I want your Cocker Spaniel to go in and flush the birds. And she'll just get used to another dog not backing if that ever happens, you know. So we trained through that. And then in October, it was October 5th, a buddy of mine, Roland Blanding, he's a judge for NAVDA, and he has some training grounds up by his house near me, about 30 minutes away. He was like, hey, if you want to train your dog at my place, you're more than welcome. And I said, you know, it'd be nice to get out to a different training grounds. And we trained that day, and we put her through every scenario you could possibly get into in a NASTRA field trial. And I was so happy. The next morning on Sunday, October 6th, I don't know if he saw a deer or what, but he dug out from underneath the fence. And I have a regimen that I follow. And every morning, you know, I let them outside in the backyard. I make a cup of coffee, go back outside, put them in their kennel and feed them. I made the cup of coffee, went outside, and both my dogs were gone. And 2 hours later, I get a phone call that they saw my dog get hit. And I didn't know which one. And they said that it looked like they hit a trash bag at first. So,
wow.
You know, right off the bat, you think it's a black trash bag, right? And I get there, and it's a white trash bag. And she was still breathing, and but it was bad, bad. And I put her in the truck. I put her in the center of in the back seat, and I put my hand on her heart, and I just started hauling, you know, as fast as I could to the emergency vet clinic. And by the time I got to the highway, her heart stopped.
Wow.
So,
well,
like a lot of people don't understand how. I mean, I know all of everyone that's listening to your podcast understands what it feels like, right? Because we spend so much. I mean, a pet is a pet, but a hunting companion. Yep. You spend your soul on this dog, especially, I mean, this wasn't some dog that I just kept in the kennel outside and got it out for hunting. I mean, this dog lived with me. It was just crazy. And it was unfortunate that happened. And then 2 weeks later, my daughter, who had purchased one of the pups from her, gave me back one of her pups.
So, oh boy!
Now I have Wyatt.
Nice. Well, so yeah. So when I ask how your season went, it was a roller coaster, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a roller coaster, and so I immediately was like, okay, I've got to start training. I mean, hunting season's here, and my what I wanted to do was just get him on birds right off the bat, right?
Yeah,
because they hadn't done anything. And the first time I put him on, and this was planted chuckers, because I wanted to see what he'd do. And he pointed the first one, and then he jumped it, and it took off, and he just started barking and chased that chucker out of the field. I'm like, whoa, can't be doing that. So I put him on a tech cord and worked him into the second chucker. And he went on point, and I just like tightened the string up a little bit, check cord up a little bit, and I got next to him. I was petting him, and I told my buddy, I said, go ahead and flush it. He flushed it, and that dog about beat me up, barking and wawing. And I was like, oh, okay, it's no more bird contact for you. You need obedience, right?
Right.
So I spent all November and all of December of just obedience, no more birds. And a friend of mine, I always take a hunting trip in Louisiana for woodcock every single year. And but this year, Knox had hurt his Achilles, so I couldn't hunt him. And so I just had this pup, right, that I had no idea what he was going to do. And a buddy of mine down there contacted me on Facebook that knew about Summit, and he was like, look, bring those dogs, and he goes, I'll put you in a spot where that dog's going to get bird contact. And I said, okay. And he put me on his spot that we waited until it was day. He told me, he said, when it gets daybreak enough for you think you can shoot, go ahead and release your dog. And Wyatt was sitting there just waiting. And I said, okay. And I let him go. And 20 yards in, we hear... And then he goes, that's one. And then we counted 9 birds in a matter of like 3 minutes that this dog just busted and was just chasing them off the country.
Richard, it sounds like your pretty good rendition of woodcock there. Down right? In Louisiana in January, I'm just guessing that's what you were after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were on woodcock. And anyway, I got him to come back. And when he came back, he slammed on his 10th bird. And Brandon was like, go ahead, that's your bird. And I walked up, and he let me flush it, and I shot it, and it was like the light flipped on. And for the next 4 days, we got up 39 woodcock over this one pup, and he was just amazing. So I told my wife, I said, I took a pup and I brought back a bird dog.
And what started really sadly, and I'm sorry for your loss there, of course, and we've all been there, and it's never easy. The season had a happy ending.
Oh yeah. And now there's just so much hope.
Yeah.
You know, like I just, now I get to do all the training, because when it happened, the only, like, really, like, I just kept, after I got Wyatt, and I started thinking about how I trained Summit, and you start thinking about how much time you spend with them. I seriously didn't think I had it in me, and I still may not.
Yeah, no, but, I think you do.
A good chalkboard to work with.
You've inspired a lot of us. It is tough, but, you know, it's like falling off a horse. The most important thing to do is get back on. Of course, you're lucky you had a transitional dog there. The Drahtar is going to, you know, always be kind of the continuum there. And
yes,
I'm glad to see that. And then the young dog, boy, that's very inspiring, and I'm sure appreciative of that. Hey, thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast, and good luck with the young dog.
Thank you, sir.
All right, our next caller is on the line. Tony, where are you calling from?
Memphis, Texas.
I didn't know there was such a place.
It's about 90 miles southeast of Amarillo, Texas.
Boy, that's it sounds like a little bit further south and east than I'm used to out there. What kind of dogs you running these days?
I run Brittany's. I've got 6 Brittany's and 1 Weimaraner.
That's quite a crew. Why the token Weim?
Well, my grandson, he raised a litter. This Weimaraner's 11 years old. And he had this litter and was trying to work his way, get his EMT and stuff. He's a paid fireman now. And I didn't want one of them, but I found out he needed a little money to take his test, and so I told him I'd buy one if he'd use it for the test. So that's how I ended up with Willie.
Love it. Oh, I love it.
And he's really made a heck of a dog. It took him about 2.5 years before it have anything to do with the bird at all. And then one day it just snapped, and he went to, he got a heck of a nose on him. He's a good bird finder, good retriever. He honors backs. And I tell everybody I wouldn't take $1 million for old Willie, but I wouldn't give a nickel for another one.
So,
They've got their own personality.
Oh, yeah.
But all of my dogs, they stay in the house. And we hadn't had a very good year the last 2 years. No birds down in here. Don't know what's happening to them. We'll have birds up until about the end of September, first week in October. And then they just disappear.
Any guesses from some of the experts out there? Is it a drought, or is it an odd rainstorm at the wrong time? What's any guess?
Well, they've come up with everything in the world. They're saying it's eye worms and fecal worms, but that wouldn't kill off the birds within a week to 2 week period.
Yeah.
All over. And I talked to a guy from over around Lawton, Oklahoma, the other day. He ran across me, and Oklahoma, all over the Texas panhandle down south, or all of the bobs, it's really working on the bob white. And I've heard everything from the worms to they're eating the crickets, or they're eating the grasshoppers, and they've got some kind of virus or something, you know. But
yuck.
My opinion, and $3 will get you a cup of coffee.
Not a very good one, though.
No. But I think that about the time we've been losing our birds is just about the time your migrating birds come through. Your dove, your cranes, you know, your ducks and stuff like that come migrate through. I'm not too sure they're not bringing something in.
You mean like a disease or a parasite or something?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, that's just my opinion. But 3 years ago, I guide hunts and take people hunting, and 3 years ago, I moved 421 cubbies that season. And the next year, I moved 100 cubbies. And last year, I actually didn't move but 4 cubbies.
Wow. Talk about a crappy season.
Yeah, and this year, I hadn't found but 2. One cubby had about 12 to 15 birds in it. And the other one didn't have but about 3 birds, all I ever located in the deal. Even out in the country, all around this area, I'm out all the time. And occasionally you'll see some birds, but not very often.
Well, we had a happy ending with our last caller, and it we're going to have to wait until next season for your happy ending, I guess. That's too bad, Tony, but, you know, we can keep our fingers crossed, eh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I always do. I'm going to keep going.
All right.
Keep the dogs going. But, you know, I called all my customers that I was booked up for this season, too, and I just called them and told them that, you know, no birds. I'd rather be honest with them because I want them to come back when we have birds. So.
Yep. I understand completely. Well, good luck with the Wyme and all the Britneys over there. It's too bad you don't have any clients this year to pay the feed bill, because I imagine it's a pretty big one.
Well, I've gotten pretty lucky. I've got a feed company that has been furnishing all my feed for several years.
Nice.
And so that helped me a lot.
Good. Good.
I appreciate you calling. I watch you. I got you on Facebook, you know, and I've kept up with you for years and watched you training and your dogs. And I train a few dogs for different people, but it's always good to talk to somebody else and get their ideas and hear what's going on.
Same here, Tony. I wish you the best. You have a great springtime, and we're almost there, I'm told, although I wouldn't believe it by looking out the window. And hopefully we'll get a good hatch, and you'll get back to those 400 covey years. Good luck to you.
Good luck. Thank you for calling.
All right, so let's get some good news from my friend Tom Fiumarello. You've seen him on the TV show Wing Shooting USA with us, and also probably follow him on Facebook. Tom has a younger dog, the only male dog of his pack. He calls them all the Spice Girls, but the puppy is the king of the Spice Court now. And Tom says he's had the best season in a long time. One of the good reasons is his young dog has grown by leaps and bounds. And hey, congratulations, Tom. You're a grandpa again. Produced an outstanding litter of pups. We'll be watching for more Spice dogs out of your pack coming up. Thanks a lot, Tom. Great job and good to hear from you. See you at Pheasant Fest. In fact, hey, everybody. If you're headed for Pheasant Fest, I'll have a big booth there. We'll be talking about my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com, and answering all your questions about bird hunting and bird dogs. Maybe I can come up with one that might actually be right. So come on down and visit at Pheasant Fest. All right, so let's get back to the phones and what I hope will be a positive, upbeat story. Matt, you're joining us from, let's see, you think I remember that. I think you're down in Southern California somewhere.
No, Mid-California. No. I'm in the Bay Area.
Okay, all right. That's close enough for me. You know, it's all the same. No, it's not really. I grew up down there. So welcome to the program. We're talking all about how our season went or how our season is going, because I'm lucky one. I still got 2 weekends left if I play my cards right around here. Tell me, what kind of dogs you're running, first off?
I have a 10-month-old black lab. And you actually gave me some pointers last month about training, because out in the field, he didn't want to do anything.
Okay, so don't hold it against me.
No. You gave me great advice. I started hunting him by himself.
Great.
You know, we were just kind of playing, you know, walking around and stuff, and we started getting on birds, and he wasn't really finding them, but I was shooting them, and he started retrieving them. And I'm like going, okay, that's a good start.
I'll say. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, for everybody else out there, I just hunted with about a 7-month-old wire-haired pointing Griffon last weekend. And same thing. You know, it's all about creating some independence and some self-reliance, as opposed to, you know, all the other things that happen when you pair dogs with other dogs out there. So glad to hear for once my advice was right.
The hunting season's been great.
Yeah, tell me all about it.
Well, in California, we don't have that many good places to hunt pheasants, so we do have to go to a club. But we're doing a nice job. I mean, the dogs are working well and we're having fun. So that's the best thing about it.
I probably been to that place that you're probably going to regularly, back in the day when I was living a little bit east of you over there. So tell me, what's been the highlight of your season?
Probably his first retrieve.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. He actually, you know, when he started sniffing around and picking it up a little bit, and that's when I said, I remember from people talking, you make it enjoyable and have fun and, you know, and stuff. And I did that, and he started picking it up and running it towards me. And then I let him play with it for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes out in the field and picked it up and threw it for him again and stuff. So that was my proud moment.
Oh, excellent. And congratulations. We needed some good news around here on this podcast, but, and this is a good way to do it. How old is your pup?
He's 10 months old.
Oh gosh. He's just getting his brain cells. Well, good on you.
And that's the thing is I think he's still using his sight more than his smell.
Yeah.
Because I've put him on top of birds before and he's almost stepped on them and, you know, throwing tennis balls. He's like stepping on it. It's like going, really, dude, it's like right there. But I figured, you know what? If I can get him to retrieve, I know he'll figure out the rest of it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with a lot of dogs and I was thinking of that Weimaraner we talked about earlier on the podcast tonight. So much of it is all about just, giving a dog enough bird contacts to the point where the light bulb goes off over their head.
Yeah.
And for some it's one bird and for others it's 101 birds, but somewhere in there, most of those dogs are going to figure it out eventually, but they can't figure it out, you know, by just listening to you lecture them.
Yeah.
Well, good exactly. for you and glad to hear it. So next season, full of promise. And in the meanwhile, you're going to train him intensively, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I've been trying to go out every weekend.
Excellent. Excellent.
And we still have, like I said, we hunt at a club, so we have until I think the end of March.
Yeah, you do. So. And I'm jealous.
You know what?
Yeah.
An invitation is always out there if you want to come down.
Okay, and now I have a whole lot of witnesses.
I'll make you look good, too.
Thank you so much, Matt. Enjoy the rest of your long season, and thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Oh, I love those positive stories. And yeah, hey, once in a while, I do have something that I can contribute in that regard. So feel free to drop me a note or give me a ring the next time we ask for calls. I'd love to help you as best I can. Hey, you know, I was reminded while we were talking about Sage and Breaker, the gun care and gun cleaning guys, just got an email from Fred Bohm over there, the founder. Great guy and an incredible hunter as well. But Fred reminds me that they will have a display at Pheasant Fest this year. So keep your eyes peeled. Number one, come see Sage and Breaker. And then also, once you've done that, please come on by and see me. Find out what's new there, because at my booth, I'll be handing you information that could put you into a brand new pointer shotgun. You'll learn more about it if you come to Pheasant Fest or later on in this very podcast. Coming to you from the Cabela's podcast studio, my good friends just renewed for their 24th year, and have added the podcast sponsorship to all the other stuff I'm doing for them on television. So thank you, everybody at Cabela's, now part of Bass Pros. And enough of that kind of talk. Let's get back to the telephone. So here we are talking about how our season's gone or is going.
Yeah.
I just love rubbing it in. I've got 2 weekends left in mine. On the line with us, Brett. Brett, you sent me a picture of at least 2 dogs. There might be one hiding on a snow patch that's all white and I can't see it. But that looks like a place I was recently, too. You don't have to give me the lat and long, but tell me about that picture you sent.
Well, first of all, stay off my mountain, Scott.
Oh, it's a spectacular shot. Let me describe it. You know, let me use my NPR skills here and describe it. This is a 50% snow covered, very rocky, very steep incline. I'll bet that's about a 70% slope, 70 degrees.
It's steep enough.
It looks not only cold, it looks slippery, but here are two dogs, and the far one, my ancient eyes will, I think I can see some feathering on the tail, so they're both probably English setters. Am I right there?
Yeah, all my dogs are setters.
All right, so tell me more. I mean, this might be the highlight of our season. Just describe this place and what you were doing there.
So this is just, it's been a wonderful season. We've just been hunting chuckers here in northern Utah. We've got 2 weeks left in our season also. So this was just last weekend. And it's a place that I've hunted since I was a kid. The birds seem to be pretty predictable, and I like places like that. Sunny, the dog in front, the pointing dog, she winded him from clear up on top of the hill. And of course, she, you know, worked her way to the, down to the bottom and went on point. And the dog behind her is a young dog who's just training him. And he got followed her down there. And as soon as he saw her, you can't see in the picture, but as soon as he came around the corner, she came visible to him, and he stopped and backed. And I was very, very proud of that. And, anyway, about, 15 birds got up in front of her, and I managed to kill a couple. So it was a good experience.
Were like me, were you falling downhill as you pulled the trigger?
You know how it is.
Yes. Yeah.
that's what makes, I think, chucker hunting and waterfowling to some degree has made me appreciate footwork in wing shooting, because you know, when your feet are stumbling or stuck in the mud, it's much more difficult to hit a target when you can't move with the target.
I joke about it, but I'm going to start taking Tai Chi just so I don't lose my balance and fall off a cliff.
It's not a bad idea, Scott.
So based on the photo and your description, it's been a pretty good season for you.
It's been a great season. Yeah. As good as I can remember.
Wow.
Utah, like a lot of states, I travel around and I hunt many ranges in the state, and some ranges have only a few birds on them, and some ranges have more, and there are just a couple of ranges that just really had a great hatch, and those ones are really spectacular this year. So.
You know, just for everybody else's benefit, the words chucker in Utah don't, until you're hardcore at this thing, they just don't seem to end up in the same sentence very often. And again, I don't want you to tell us exactly where you were, but it is refreshing to hear that there's more than one place, and you know that place I'm talking about.
I do.
That people can go to chase these birds out there.
Yeah. No, there's a very good chucker population in Utah, and we have a conservation organization called the Utah Chucker and Wildlife Foundation that really does a wonderful job of building some guzzlers in the desert and doing other things to make sure that there are some chuckers around.
Well,
and there's good chucker hunting in Utah.
And we've on the TV show sponsored that foundation a little bit in terms of some of their public awareness. And I'm glad to hear it's doing the job over there.
I saw that, and we certainly appreciate that. I'm on the board of the Chucker Foundation.
Well, keep up the good work. Someday I will get out there. I do want to visit that special spot that I think we're both thinking about right now.
You look me up, and we'll make it happen.
That sounds great. I appreciate that, and glad you had a great season. Looking forward to hearing more from you towards the end. Share some more pictures for us when you wrap it all up, and I'll promise to do the same. I got enough time left. I might actually take a new camera with me.
That sounds like a great idea.
All right, man.
Enjoy the rest of your season.
Thank you. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
And we're going to take a quick break here for some of the things that help me pay the bills. Yeah, it does cost money to put this all together. And thanks to folks like Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food, I can do that. Don't go away, because we got lots more callers on the lines. They're already full. But we'll take more of this kind of talk in upcoming podcasts. Believe me, we will. Dr. Tim Hunt, to his friends, has been developing dog food for quite a while, and I've been feeding that dog food to my dogs for the last 3 wire hairs. If you want to try his food, here's an incentive for you. 30% off your first order. Just go to drtims.com, and that's on the website. It's drtims.com, and when you check out, use the code Upland Nation for 30% off your first order. It is the reason I use it is he's got a variety of formulations depending on what you're trying to get out of your dog. But this guy is not only a veterinarian, he's a dog guy. In fact, he races in the sled dog world. And if you follow that sport, you know that there is no room for error in the feeding process there. Lots of the most recent Iditarod winners have been feeding Dr. Tim's food. Take a look at drtims.com, and don't forget that 30% discount on your first order. Just use the code UplandNation. And while you're poking around on the World Wide Web, visit my good friends at espamerica.com. They make hearing protection, all sorts of electronic versions, custom fitted. Love that, because they won't fall out in the field. And I am wearing mine in the field as well as on the range these days, because hearing loss is cumulative. So if you lose some, you can't get it back with pills or exercises or any other kind of magic or voodoo out there. So take care of your ears. Learn more about all the varieties at espamerica.com. All right, and welcome back to the remainder of the Upland Nation podcast from the Cabela's podcast studio. This is where we learn the easy way, because your host here has learned the hard way. I call it the Handle It segment, where I will give you my 2 cents worth on some aspect of taking care of your dog or training him. One of the interesting Facebook comments I got when I asked about this whole idea of how your season's going was a little bit of a horror story from one of our friends out there, who said the retrieving process with his young dog had gone sideways in a number of respects. I think it all boiled down to a transition, and I've worked hard on this. In fact, I invented a bumper for this, because what I've found is that once you transition from dowels to paint rollers to those hard plastic bumpers to those hard rubber bird-shaped but not bird acting bumpers, the dog is a little confused, because then you ask him to go out and pick up this real bird that doesn't feel like any of those things and doesn't act like any of those things. So unless you want to go out and buy my real bird bumper, which I hope you do, you can do some other things that will encourage your dog to make that transition a little bit more smoothly. First things first, find some other stuff out there that your dog can pick up and carry around that is soft, mushy, and maybe limp in one way or another. You know, I take shot bags. You know, I used to reload shotgun shells, so I have all these shot bags, wash them carefully, and then put stuff in them and get the dogs used to carrying stuff around that's loose and squishy and that sort of thing. And the other transition might be a little bit easier, because you take all those familiar objects that your dog has already been retrieving successfully, dowels, paint rollers, bumpers, and put some bird parts on there. The easiest thing to put on there are a few feathers here and there. You know, duct tape will come in real handy for that. Eventually a wing or 2 wings or most of a pelt if you're so far along that you do that sort of thing. But take those dogs from where they are, retrieving hard objects, to where you want them to be, retrieving mushy, soft, dead birds. All right, so with that in mind, good luck. Let's find out how the rest of the season is going for everybody else when we go back to the phones right now. And Kevin is on the line from somewhere, I'm going to say south and maybe east a little bit. Kevin, where are you calling us from?
I am in Worcester, Ohio.
Not so far south, but my old home state. Go Buckeyes.
Go Buckeyes. You know what? I did not know you were from Ohio.
Oh, I left when I was two.
Oh. Well, awesome. Hey, once a Buckeye, always a Buckeye.
So they say. I did have the chance to go back and dot the I on the football field for the marching band, but I found out you have real winners out there, and I decided against it.
I tell you, we've had a pretty mild one this year. Haven't had a lot of snow.
Good, good. So, how's your season going?
Our big trip this year, we went to North Dakota, and it was me, one of my sons, my brother, and two of my buddies, and went out to North Dakota. I think, on your text when I was finding out about this podcast, we probably went out a little bit too early, but it was the time that I could. I'm just a construction worker, kind of got to pick and choose when I can go. And we went maybe the third week of October. And it was, with the winters being the way they've been, I think that there's more rain and this year in a lot of the areas, and the crops are still up.
Oh,
so,
boy.
With crops up, a lot of the roosters are going to be holding in crops, and they're off limits. We self-guided ourselves, had our five Britneys out there, looked. My son had contacted somebody from Pheasants Forever, and they kind of maybe gave us some areas that we might want to try, and we went on their plots maps and kind of found some areas that they had kind of said that weren't too bad, or some areas that they had some success, and some areas that we just kind of found, and went out there and did our thing, had a ball, beautiful country, unlike stuff that we see in Ohio, the cover and stuff, and it's just great. Great getting out west and trying to explore this country and all the different bird areas, as much as we can, and see what it's really like. Ohio's pretty tough. It's pretty tough for birds.
I bet.
Rough grouse are down. We still have some. We have a place down in that my dad, when he retired, purchased mostly our deer camp and stuff, but there's still rough grouse down on our property, and we hunted a little here and there. When we hear drumming and stuff, we try to see it, how kind of predict it. Maybe, there's going to be some numbers, so we don't try to kill it, every grouse that we, hear or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we'll hunt it once in a while, but we go up to the UP grouse hunting or into Michigan. Ohio's pretty tough. We went to North Dakota, and we hit a lot of the plots lands. We were in southwest North Dakota, we stayed, kind of made our base like in Dickinson.
Know it well.
Okay. And stayed in some hotels in there. And I think, the first day maybe we hunted closer to, is a 25-hour drive. And so we kind of crashed out in Bismarck. And I think the first place we hit was more closer to there. And then we moved. And we actually had pretty decent success, but it was pouring rain. Cold, 39 degrees, freezing rain, and it. But like I said, the crops were up and the birds were holding in the corn and like just outside the limits, and the dogs kind of caught some on the edge, but they just kind of glided over the corn. Couldn't get shots or anything.
Yeah.
But the next day we moved into Dickinson and we found a couple areas, and we got some real nice points, but most of them were hens. We got into one area and we probably put up 30 hens, and we probably got into five roosters, and maybe one of them presented like a real good shot. Some of them, they were running a little bit on the dogs, they're moving out, and then they get up 30 40 yards out, and maybe we wouldn't get a real good shot, but we had some success there. And then some of the other areas, we ended up getting into some sharp-tailed grouse, which I've never had any experience with that, and we knocked a few of them down, had some real nice points. And the first day we were in like a hilly area, and they were coming off these hills, and we were kind of in the down below, and it was a little tougher. But the next day we caught some in this nice open prairie area, and we had some nice points on them, and knocked some down, and we got into a few coveys of Hungarian partridge, which was cool as heck. We've never seen any wild Hungarian partridge. And I think my son one day ended up getting he got a limit of them, so that was really neat. And like I said, we found some other areas, and we did get a couple roosters, but mostly we were just getting into hens, tons of hens that we really had the real nice lockdown points, and they were just hens and stuff. But the roosters weren't holding, and like I said, we were a lot of crops, and they were holding into the crops and stuff. Sometimes the dogs don't, they don't know they can't go in there on the edge, and then you hear the cackling, and you just see them, or they're right on the edge, and they get up, and they're just going over that corn, just right at the top of the corn. You can't get any kind of shots, and they're out of bounds. And
sounds a lot like my first North Dakota trip, only there was a lot more snow. But it was the eye opener for me was the sharp tails, and in fact, much like you, they were alongside a lot of those crops, and that was a pleasant surprise for a lot of reasons. Yeah. And so I'm glad you ran into them, and then the Hun thing. Wow, you got lucky on that stuff as well.
Yeah,
it's not hard to tell where the highlight of your season was, Kevin. I bet it was over there in the Dickinson metropolitan area.
Yeah,
good on you.
Yeah, I'd say. And, I mean, it was good. Fun. I mean, we actually did go down into like Slope County and like in the Badlands.
Mm-hmm.
We actually, and that was the first day we actually got into some into the sharp tails. But we actually camped out in an area for two nights, and that was cool as heck. And we didn't always just stay in a hotel and stuff. And, we got a little bit of camping out there, and grilled some sharp tail on a little grill, and had that at night.
Well, you're living the dream, man. That's the kind of stuff that everybody needs to hear about, because it is exactly why we go. And then there's some birds there. Well, I'm glad you had such a great time out there, and it sounds like you're still kind of going at it. I know it's a little different now this time of year, but good on you. And Kevin, thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
Okay, well, hopefully I added something positive. And, really enjoyed your book. I had your book since it came out, and enjoyed reading that, and try to catch your show whenever possible and stuff. And really enjoy your easygoing personality, and
relaxed
way you carry yourself and stuff. It's a lot to, sometimes you watch shows and everything's like rah, and they're all jacked up and stuff. It's nice to just see an easy keel guy and just lighthearted, and I enjoy that.
Well, I appreciate it, and I promise to miss one on your behalf. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks again for being on the podcast.
All right. Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you. Bye.
Which reminds me, I've just been informed by my publisher that the third printing of my book will be coming out in paperback in June, probably. I'll keep you posted as that comes together. We had a little bit of I'll call it a discussion about retitling it for the market. And so I'll let you know what it's called in good time. All right. So, Kevin mentioned some things that I think are worth just reinforcing. I don't want to lecture to you, but it is all about the other stuff sometimes, whether it's seeing the new sights in a new place, the Badlands or the prairies or new birds, sharp tails and huns, or the people you're with. I encourage you to kind of take a moment every once in a while, open up the gun, and just ponder those things as well. And ponder them in particular when you hear John Gleason, one of my Facebook friends who I tried to reach you, but I just couldn't get that number right. John's over there in Ireland, and he said, today was the last day of my season. I only met one pheasant, and it wasn't his day. And John accompanies that with a picture, and there looked to be a whole bunch of other birds in there, but yeah, just the one rooster. I think that's probably a good cap right there on the season. Good for you and good on everybody else. Patrick States dropped me a line and said, Rebel put up birds, but I couldn't hit the floor if I fell on it. Hey, that's my line. But thanks, Patrick, and hope your next season goes better. Okay, back to the phones here. More inspiration, I hope. Chris is calling from somewhere out there in 414 area code. Where are you, Chris?
Well, actually, I'm currently located in Albertville, Minnesota. I'm a former Wisconsinite who was transplanted here in the last year.
You mean there's a difference? I know. That's them's fighting words, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, there is a difference.
Yeah, yeah. Well, are they treating you okay over there?
Oh, sure.
Good.
Yeah, they are.
What kind of dogs you running these days, Chris?
Well, I have a 3-year-old yellow lab.
Yeah.
That's got her NARA started title. I belong to a NARA kennel club. So we train one night a week in the summer and run hunt tests, so...
All right, so when you're not training, how did your season go this year?
It got off to a late start with some business, business conflicts, but late November through December, January, I've been able to get out probably, I think, 6 or 7 times. Been successful up until actually this past weekend. We had a tough go with pheasants that wanted to run on us, so... little bit of a struggle there, but
yeah. Around your place somewhere, or did you have to go far for those running pheasants?
There's a fair amount of Minnesota public land, but then also we have quite a few hunt clubs and so on. This was a hunt club this weekend up in near Ogilvie, which is about 40 minutes north of where I am, so.
Well, you're lucky to have one that close. Believe me, it would sure help with my training. We have to go a lot farther, but that's not your problem. So, what would you consider to be the highlight of your season, Chris?
One of the things I've been working on is blind retrieves, blind marks with some handling. My daughter was up here Thanksgiving weekend, and we were able to get out on Black Friday. And she hit a pheasant that, and I know they could be tough. It glided, maybe 100 and some yards over a rise. I was able to give my lab's name is Maddie, give her a mark, and sent her on her way. And a couple minutes later, she came back with the bird and without any help. I know my daughter was like, wow, that's awesome, Dad. That's a long way from where we started.
Don't you just love that?
Yeah, it's the training I put in the last year has been a lot more than previous, and it's paid off a lot. She's made a big difference. Now, is she going to be a national senior level champion? Probably not, and some of that may be, due to my training ability, but be an effective bird dog, certainly.
It's funny you bring up number one, weekly training group, and we have a little one that people who listen to the podcast regularly know about. And since we started that group, this season, maybe the highlight of my season could have been hunting with each of those guys at least once and having all of them say, I'm glad we did that because it forced me to train every day to get ready for that Thursday night. And my dog truly did benefit from that. So I think we're both testimony to the value of what I'll loosely call peer pressure.
Yeah. In fact, my partner Saturday that went along with me is another gentleman in our kennel club, and he's got a 6-year-old senior level pup, and then he's got a 14-month-old that will start the started program with NARA this spring and summer. And he's never hunted over Maddie, but you know, we had a good time and put up a bunch of birds. We didn't, some of our shooting and some long shots, but you know, it's not always birds in the bag that make the difference.
No, absolutely not, or I wouldn't be playing this game anymore, that's for sure. Oh my, but it's,
I remember hunting with my father as a kid without a dog, and it's just so different. You know, now this is my second retriever. I had a English lab before this one. Right now I'm running an American Field Lab, and just having a dog makes such a difference.
Hey, just in 25 words or less, just for some people who maybe not familiar with the Labrador world, describe the difference, the fundamental difference between an English Labrador and an American Labrador.
English Labrador will be a little shorter in stature, but heavier, thicker, a little more docile, can be a little more tractable. The American Field Lab has a lot more motor, mm-hmm. Leaner. Maddie's 53 pounds of lightning. You know, when you open the back of the truck, you better be ready to go because that she's got one speed.
Yeah, sounds like a fun one to me. Well, good on you. Glad the season went well. It sounds like you may actually be, you know, like so many of us, the season really never ends, and that's wonderful for all of us who love playing with dogs. So, Chris, so great to talk with you. Thank you
very much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
Okay. Thank you. Bye bye.
I'm going to brag on Flick for a minute here because Chris brought up that blind retrieve, and we had a situation where I wing clipped a chucker at the top of a hill a couple weekends ago and watched it glide not only all the way down to the bottom but around a rocky point. And I thought, okay, what do we do here? Well, the number one rule in chucker hunting is never give up altitude, but that doesn't balance out with my sportsmanship attitude. So I humped all the way down there. We searched and searched and searched. And the lesson in all of this is either don't stop searching or make sure you mark it on your GPS and come back to it, which is what I did. Sure enough, we made a big circle and hunted down and back into the wind at the very bottom. And the first time I hear the beeper go off, I see Flick's little tail. And he is ankle deep in the little creek. And he is pointing that wing-clipped chucker, which looked as pretty as a picture, just crouched behind a little bit of a sagebrush on the side of that creek. I sent him in for the retrieve, and boy, oh boy, was I proud of him. So don't give up. Come on back down, mark it, come on back down, and then search into that wind again whenever you possibly can. It worked for us, and it'll probably work for you. Boy, I just love this job. Yeah, I really do. And here's another reason why. Kevin, you're joining us from where these days?
Jennings, Oklahoma.
Yeah, been out to Oklahoma. Can't wait to get back. How was your season this year?
Well, it's been fairly decent. I mean, we've done a lot of traveling, but, you know, bird numbers have been pretty good for the most part. We've had to kind of move around and adapt to conditions, but other than that, I mean, can't ask for better.
Yeah, two things. First off, bobwhites?
We have bobwhites, we have ringneck pheasants, and we have American woodcock out here, which nobody ever thinks of Oklahoma for woodcock.
Well, they got to pass through. We just never think about them dawdling long enough, I guess. Well, that's it. That's wonderful news. So tell me all about it.
Well, here around the Tulsa area, I tend to find woodcock, you know, starting in October before the season actually opens for us. Okay. I'll start seeing them, and we'll end up, as soon as the season opens, it's usually black powder season for deer at the same time, and we'll start hitting the woodcock as soon as we get done with the deer. And then we move from woodcock straight into quail, and which quail this year was November 11th. So we started woodcock November 1st and went to quail November 11th. So we're pretty quick right into it.
Nice.
And then we start pheasant in December. So December 1st, we were into pheasants, which Oklahoma is not a big pheasant state, but we do have pheasants. You know, they are out there if you put in the groundwork. I've been hunting them now for the last 5 years, so I pretty well have a good idea of where the best places are to find them.
You said you had to be a little bit creative, maybe. You didn't use that term, but it sounds like you were digging deep to find birds.
This year, because of all the flooding this spring, a lot of the good habitat that we used to have was pretty much non-existent.
Yeah.
But there were pockets. And if you knew where the pockets were, generally, you know, where there might be a hill that's a little, you know, a little higher than where everything flooded, there was still good cover. There was still birds that were able to nest and hatch, you know, successful hatches. There were pockets where there was really good bird numbers.
Nice.
So you kind of had to bounce around, and a lot of the good places we used to have were too low and they were in the flood zone. But we had some new pockets that are really great because of the extra rain. There was extra bugs, there was extra cover. They turned out to be better. So some of the coveys we were finding for bobs and some of the pheasants that we were finding, you know, we'd see 30-plus bird coveys, where in places where you used to maybe see 10 or 15.
Wow.
So that's a big increase.
Man, you do not hear the good news out of the flooding situation very often. I'm thinking of Iowa a few years back. If you're from that area, you probably remember it not fondly, but boy, it was devastating to the bird populations there. I'm glad to hear that. That's spectacular. Go ahead.
I think what it is that the high ground advantage, the birds that were up on that higher ground, they got all that extra water, so all that extra food and cover without having the flood damage because they were above it.
Yeah.
It really helped in those areas. I mean, it definitely put them way above normal as far as bird numbers.
How about your dogs? What kind of success have you had in the dog world?
Well, I run kind of a mixed crew. I'll hunt behind anything. I'm a firm believer. If it hunts, I'll hunt behind it. I've got a couple Brittany's. I've got a short hair. I've got an English pointer right now I'm messing with. I really just kind of let the dogs be dogs. I've got one dog right now that's been completely trained on wild birds, has never seen a trainer, has never been on pen birds in her life. She's been taken to the field, and that's it. We run her behind another dog that knew what he was doing to get her started, and she's doing it on her own now. And I have actually kind of been experimenting with that, and I'm starting a second dog now doing the same thing, and so far it's going pretty good.
Can you run dogs on birds all year out there?
We have a season on public land you're allowed to train.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they shut it down May 1st. It's either May 1st or June 1st. They shut it down for the summer.
Yeah.
And then we'll open back up again September 1st.
Well, you are one of the lucky ones to be able to do that. And of course, as so many people, including George Hickox, have said, no birds, no bird dog. You've mm-hmm. got birds, and now you know where to find them. If you wanted to help anybody else out in that regard, you know, you mentioned earlier in a exchange of notes that you hunt a lot of public land. Give us a hint on finding good places to hunt.
Well, a lot of the public land here in Oklahoma is going to have birds on it. I mean, they're going to be there. There may not be a lot of them, but there will be some. And one of the keys I've found with public land is to go to the places that nobody else really likes to go. Go to where, you know, parking lot ain't really used much. You don't really see a whole lot of traffic in and out. If you do, it's usually deer hunters. And get back in there. And a lot of times you just go on that extra step, that extra field, just a little further than everybody else makes a difference.
Amen to that. I'll tell you, you're absolutely right. And that has been working for me all season. Mm-hmm. You know, you are lucky. It's been a couple now, maybe 3 years since your walk-in hunting program got started. I think you call it OLAP out there.
OLAP.
Have you been taking advantage of that?
I have actually made it a business to go around and check out every WMA and every OLAP property that I can get to. I've covered a pretty good portion of them. There's been kind of some mixed up and down with the OLAP just because they're getting started. They don't really have a whole handle on it yet, but they're getting better. They acquired some really nice properties right off the bat. They got really lucky on some of those, but they also acquired some that were just downright useless. I mean, that's just the way it goes,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of them, you know, we had when they acquired them, they were fallow ground. But then after they had already got the money and everything, the farmers went and plowed it.
Yeah, you know, and I'm voting for a penalty for those guys.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. And I mean, when it's labeled, hey, this is fallow ground, you know, you're thinking, okay, there ought to be some cover there. And you get there and it's plowed from roadside to roadside and there's not a scrap of grass anywhere.
Yeah, I just did a video on that whole subject and how, you know, if we have the time and ability and the person to contact, we need to talk to the guy who administers that area and find out who's plowed, who's burnt, who hasn't harvested yet, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. It does require a little bit of homework, but I'm glad to hear that you're exploring all of those. It's a goal for me, too. So, wonderful. Yep. Glad to hear somebody who's kind of an equal opportunity dog handler too. That's quite a pack mm-hmm. you got there. All right, man. Well, I appreciate your participation on the Upland Nation podcast, and let's hope next season goes as well as this one did for you, Kevin.
Oh yeah, hopefully.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Wow. So glad to hear all those sort of things happening out there. If you're looking for inspiration, I mean, play this back again and talk to some of these folks, whether it's losing a dog and finding a dog, if you will, to exploring all of this country that we now have available to us through some of these public access programs. I'm stoked, and I only wish I had two more years, not two more weeks left in my season. Maybe you feel the same way. All right, so let's take a quick break here because I got to pay some of the bills, and I do that with the kind folks at Dogtra and dogtra.com. That's where you get 10% off anything you buy over $200 and free shipping on anything over $200. Just use the promo code SLUN10. Watch the video on the T&B duel that my friend Corey Tart over at Grand Seal Lodge made with them, and then check out that T&B duel as well. Two sets of buttons, one-hand operation. You don't have to toggle back and forth. You got two collars. You got two dogs. You can use two collars without having to mess around with the screen. Just press the right colored buttons and you've got results. And if you will, please, I invite you to visit my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com. Not going to give you the latitude and longitude, but I'm going to give you the town to work from and general directions on what to find and how you'll find it out there. If you will take a look at it, I'd sure appreciate your feedback. And if you do sign up for the mailing list, you're entered to win that pointer over and under shotgun. Any gauge you like. I'm shooting one right now and I'm loving it. They got some small gauge guns, so if you're thinking about dabbling in the 28 gauge world, maybe you'll win it. And is there any better way to dabble in 28 gauges than with a free shotgun? And finally, ESBAmerica.com. They're my hearing protection of choice. All sorts of choices on the website. In fact, they're all lined up right there. Talk about transparency. You can compare every single one of their models right there on the same page. It is the way to go. ESBAmerica.com. And that is my signal to shut the heck up and let you get back to whatever else you were doing. I want to thank you for listening. Thank all of the callers for being part of this incredible community we're building. Serious folks, serious about dogs, public land hunting, and hunting in general, and bird populations and conservation. It's all happening here at the Upland Nation podcast. Get all the details at uplandnation.com. Learn more at the Upland Nation Facebook page and also at the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page. Please share. And please subscribe, rate, or review this podcast. That kind of stuff helps. In fact, thank you if you've done that, because last week we were number one with a bullet in the outdoors and bird hunting category. Keep up the good work. If you want to talk on the podcast, or if you just want to ask a question, email me at scottlindenoutdoors@gmail.com. I answer every email. I promise never to waste your time, never to disrespect your intelligence or the value of your time. That's what we're doing here at the Upland Nation Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.